Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome back on our special Mother's Day show here in, on Circles of Change in Tucson, Arizona. And with great joy, we're actually going to speak with a gentleman in the Big Island of Hawaii, Don Herzler. Welcome to the show, Don.
Good morning. How are you?
Terrific. Thanks for taking time away from snorkeling or whatever you're going to be up to later on. I assume the weather's gorgeous. The sky's blue. So
83 degrees and beautiful day here.
There you go. Great. Well, let me offer our listeners an brief introduction of Don. He's an author, photographer, speechwriter, and during his 40-year corporate career, he rose from a clerk position at Allstate Insurance through the disciplines of training, communication, marketing, and underwriting to become CEO and president of a billion-dollar business with Zurich Financial Services. He was a 2005 Gold Torch Award honoree for leadership and innovation within insurance communication, an honor bestowed by the Insurance Marketing Association. A native of Southern California, Don and his wife Linda of 40 years have lived all over the U.S. and recently moved from full-time location Chicago now to Hawaii. He's a marathon runner, loves the outdoors, and no doubt because of his background, he's an NCAA Division II track and field All-American and a member of the Chapman University Athletic Hall of Fame, a school based in California. His new book that we're going to focus on today is called The Way Up, How to Keep Your Career Moving in the Right Direction, and it's chock full of pragmatic advice and principles of business and life success for readers looking to start or restart their careers, all the way to those of you who are shifting for a variety of reasons. And I'd also tell you, it's a very entertaining read. You made me laugh, Don. It was terrific.
I make myself laugh at the nutty things that I end up doing, but thank you for all of that.
You're welcome. Well, in fact, I'd like to just start with that. One of those vignettes right at the near opening of your book, your first mantra is, you have to be on time. Share with the listeners the story of you being invited to a prestigious meeting with the chairman of the board.
Well, I was so far away from being anywhere around any chairman of the board at the time. I was new in my career, and I had earned a professional designation, and I was invited by the Pacific Life Insurance Company, the great folks with the whale commercial and all that, to have lunch with the board of directors and to be honored at their home office. And so on the day of the event, I was traveling. I was in Reno and Las Vegas, and I just realized I was going to be late. We got back to Orange County. I got my car. I just jetted across Orange County. I got to their place. I asked where the boardroom was. They told me. I ran up to it, and I knocked on the door. The door was locked. I knew I was in trouble then. I could hear voices in there, and I heard it go silent when I knocked, and they came over and opened the door, and I looked in, and I could see the board of directors, and this gentleman stood up, who I recognized as the chairman, and he says, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "I'm really embarrassed." I said, "I'm 15 minutes late for the luncheon, the honors luncheon, and I'm embarrassed as can be, but I'd like to join if I can." And he says, "Well, son," he looked around the room, he says, "Son," he says, "you're not 15 minutes late." He says, "You're a week and 15 minutes late." That was last week. He said, "But if you'll give us your name, you can come in and join us. This is the board of directors, and we are having lunch." And I said, "So you don't know my name?" He said, "No." And I said, "Well, thank you very much, and good day."
And you left.
And I left. I left with my tail between my legs. I've never been so embarrassed in my life. But so I said from then on, I was going to check that calendar every day. I was going to check my appointments every day. And I would never let that happen to me again. And then, of course, I did everything I could to blame it on others.
That's right. Which, really, I know you're joking. Well, Don, the opportunity you took now to take some time in amongst other things that you and your wife, Linda, now are enjoying, though, to impart all this wisdom and write this book. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. It's imparting not my wisdom. It's imparting the wisdom of the people that raised me up in business and in life, and passing it along. And I know you do the same.
Yeah. Well, the idea, too, that though you, through the course of the book, tell your own stories to keep this thing very human and real, because we all have got them, right? I mean, just like...
Unfortunately.
But, you know, I think in general, the stories are what really best coaches can offer others. So, and I know, you know, we might want to even just start there, the importance of coaches that you've seen over the years for your own career, but as you advise others.
Oh, my goodness. I am kind of nutty on the importance of a coach in your life. So to me, a coach is somebody who tells you the truth about yourself, even when you maybe don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a long athletic career and had the most wonderful coach in the world. And he would tell me when I was doing things right. He would inspire me. He would, gosh, one of the coolest things he ever did was he arranged for the current Olympic and world record holder to have a one-on-one dinner with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an 18-year-old kid, 17, 18-year-old kid. And at the end of that dinner, I said to myself, gee, he's a human being just like I am.
Right.
And it really made it all of a sudden seem like, hey, maybe I could do what he does. So coaches do wonderful things, but mostly they guide you and they help you self-correct. They tell you what needs to be done, and they love you and pat you on the back when things go well, and they, you know, maybe slap you a little harder when things don't go so well.
Yeah,
so I think
sort
coaches
of the,
are really important.
You bet. The old, and what were you thinking?
Yeah, and what
but
were
I
you
think,
thinking?
Wouldn't you agree, though, Don, that some of your best coaches, though, were the ones that wouldn't necessarily lay out the roadmap of step one through step 100, but would rather ask you the questions so you found that path deep within yourself?
Oh, my goodness. One of them asked me, this was my high school track coach, and I called him. I mean, I stayed really close friends with him until the day he died, and I miss him every day. But I called him one day, and I said, Coach, I said, I became CEO today, and they're going to announce it at noon, but I'm going to be CEO of this billion-dollar company, and that's happening today. And he told me how proud I was and reminded me of all the hard work I'd put in to get to that point. And then there was kind of a pause, and he said, wow, he says, what are you going to do with this opportunity? And then he said, you've always talked about diversity and your view that the business place isn't as wide open as it needs to be, and that every business needs to look like America and act like America. What are you going to do about that?
So here he wasn't even letting you up in your moment of glory. He was already telling you, Don, so what's the big game you're now going to play from this really important role of contribution?
Exactly. And he didn't, like you said, he didn't say, here's how you do that. He said, hey, I want to remind you of something.
That's right.
So, I love coaches.
You bet. The metaphor, the way up, you know, of course, the old hierarchical corporate ladder thing, I'd say. But would you not agree, though, Don, today that it isn't necessarily the ladder that you see people progress in their careers, but maybe this broader web they find themselves in, or the creation of a circle that kind of iterates and changes with the way companies and careers are different than perhaps when you and I grew up?
Well, I hate to admit it. I've never thought of it that way, but I think you're exactly right. It is completely different than when I grew up. And I know my dad was with his first company for 37 years, I think, and then his second one for 11 years, and then he retired at age 70. So it's completely different. My son-in-law's had four or five jobs, and he's doing just great. So, yep, it is. But the way up also includes the way down, because I talked during the book about the fact that no matter if you did it like my dad did it or if you do it like my son-in-law is doing it, you're going to be up and you're going to be down, and you need to be able to handle both of those situations.
And so the being down, you speak about very straight in your book, either things that happen to you or that you self-inflict, right?
So, well, absolutely.
Right.
So you know, I was with one company for 28 years, and honestly would have been a lifer there because, of course, that's what my dad was, and I would have been happy to retire from that company. But guess what? They sold the part of the company that I was in.
Right.
And I was so desperate to hold on that I went out and borrowed a unimaginable amount of money to try and buy it myself, and came in second, and then actually did leave. But yeah, those I didn't ask for that, but it came my way, and those kinds of things are going to come to your listeners' way as well.
Part of what you advise, of course, is to not necessarily view those things as crushing defeats, but rather opportunities to really trade up once you get your bearings.
Oh, absolutely. I am so thankful for every career move I've made. And looking back, if I were to do things over again, I probably would have made more moves than I did. I know certainly I wouldn't stay 28 years at one company, even though I love that company and it was a wonderful experience. But there's all sorts of possibilities that arrive, even dressed up like change and failure.
That's exactly right. Or we rephrase them as learning opportunities, right?
Absolutely, betcha.
Well, but I'm sure those are the people that are listening, and this whole thought of, you know, what should a person do if they're not seeing career progress?
Well, first, find somebody who'll talk to them straight and give them the truth about themselves.
Right, the feedback.
Yeah, get some feedback about, you know, what's holding me back, and please tell me the truth. I can take it. Even, hey, I'm giving you permission to make me cry, you know. If you hit something that's such a nerve that I cry, that's just fine. I need that help, and I need it right now. But people, I don't know if it's confidence or I don't know what it is, but people seem to be reluctant to do that sometimes. You need that feedback. And then secondly, you need to take that feedback and, you know, maybe bust a move.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you can't just sit in the same desk and think you're going to have a different outcome tomorrow morning. Maybe you will, but if you've been there for 5 years looking for that promotion, it may be another 5 years, and pretty soon you're, you know, heading toward the end of your career. So at some point you have to say, enough's enough. I've got bigger fish to fry in this life, and I'm going to bust a move. And then you have the confidence to go out and make that happen.
But, you know, some people, when part of the reason they may not ask that question, or I think we all, it's a human condition, have been in that situation, is, though, how do they recover from what you call in your book a self-inflicted career wound?
Well, again, if you're going to have a 40-year career, you're going to shoot yourself on the foot
many times,
once or twice, you know,
exactly,
probably more than that. And I certainly did, within my realm of friends, kind of famously a few times. And it hurts, and you're embarrassed, and, you know, it's not a good thing. But you know what? You survive it. You get up off the mat and go on down the road, and son of a gun, time goes by and you're back ahead of where you were before that all happened. So you just can't let things get your goat forever.
I recall, I was in fact sharing this with a friend this morning, at 34, after being with the company for a long, long time that I dearly loved, I made a switch, and for a variety of reasons, things didn't work out, and, quote, I got fired. And some of those first phone calls you make are so important to kind of wake you up, and I made a call to an executive search professional that knew me very, very well, explained what had happened, and he says, well, congratulations. And I said, excuse me, I just told you I was fired. And he said, well, Zara, he says, your role in life is to ignite and make change happen. It is not a popularity contest. And by the way, sooner you get fired for the first time at 34 versus 44 or 54, so that you're now going to know how to deal with it.
Absolutely.
And by the way, you're going to know how to coach others who might befall those kind of situations. Or by the way, you're going to be on the other side of the table having to fire someone, and you're going to know the outplacement process. You're going to want to help them through from a, you know, humane standpoint. And you know that one statement, you know, you talk about a coach, that one statement right away shifted me immediately.
Absolutely.
And I said, hot dog, you know, you mean I got a trophy. Now, as you say, in your close circle of friends, you don't let it be known too well. But here we now, you know, fast forward 20 years later almost. And, you know, what we find, of course, is people who have spent a long time in the same company actually now may not have as many opportunities as those who have shifted, because there's this question of, you mean you didn't think you needed to get on and do something different? You know, so it's a shift in the workplace, isn't it?
I know it's true. Absolutely, completely true. And what wise advice that person gave you. It's just part of, it's a part of a career. That's all it is, part of a career. I want to say one other thing, and that is, I made it a personal point of pride or whatever, a concern, to make sure that when I fired people, and unfortunately I had to in a lot of cases, and I'm not talking about you're not doing a good job type firing. I'm talking about, hey, we're closing this office.
Exactly,
and
the
750 of you are leaving, that kind of thing. I did everything I could to treat those people with respect and to care for them as human beings and to help them to make a transition. Now, I will be the first to say some of them turned their back on me and wouldn't even hear me. Others, I'm sure, hate me for life. But a heck of a lot of them I've managed to stay friends with over a lot of years, and every now and again we'll get invited to dinner, as we did recently, and by someone that I had I had fired, and my wife says, now, are you going to have someone taste the food before? I said, no, honestly, we're good.
Well, I think the other piece of it would probably be because somewhere in that mix, that person has said to you, you know, that was the best thing that could have happened to me. It caused me to go take this shift or that shift in my life, and if I'd stayed, I would have been glued to the floor.
Absolutely, and as you go, relating back to your story, if you've been fired at least once, you know what it feels like to be on the other side of it, and you know whether you were treated poorly or well, you learn from it either way, and then you can say, you know, if I'm ever in a position to have to fire someone, I'm going to make sure it goes as well
exactly.
as possible for that human being.
Well, you know, in many regards, we look at our leaders that have been our role models, and sometimes you underestimate that actually you need to collect the stuff from the bad guys as well as the good guys. And sometimes that file in the folder of how not to manage can be much more compelling to move you forward. So with that, I know in your book, you talk about how to handle a bad boss. And I think this is one, pay attention, folks. This is an important one to hear some of the wise words from Don Herzler. His book, again, is The Way Up, How to Keep Your Career Moving in the Right Direction. So that favorite subject of surviving the bad boss.
Well, I call it the boss from hell, and I'm not talking about the crooks. I'm not talking about somebody who is sexually or physically abusing you or you know, openly stealing money and making you a part of the scheme. I'm just talking about the bad bosses, the ones that don't talk to you, that talk down to you, that have a best friend and ignore everybody else. You know, the bad bosses, we get them.
We're convinced they're bipolar. I mean, that's like they walk in, you have no idea what you're going to deal with that day.
Absolutely. And so you need to have a bit of a game plan, because if you, again, have a 40-year career, you're going to have maybe a half a dozen of those that you have to deal with, and you have to survive them or buy running shoes, because you'll be running for a new job all the time. So I say, you know, sit down with them, and that's sometimes even difficult, but sit down with them and have a very, very short list of things that you think will improve your productivity at work if they can help you on them. Like, you know, could we talk once a month how things are going, or whatever it happens to be, but have a short list of one or two things. If you get those going, then maybe you can get a third one going eventually, and then maybe you can kind of correct the relationship. You're not going to get everything, because usually bad bosses have very short attention spans. So failing that, just sit down, do a good job, do the best you can, start looking around the company and seeing if maybe you can bust a move elsewhere. But you've got to survive these people. You've got to have a game plan for survival, and that game plan can never include losing your dignity or your confidence.
That's right. I think the other piece of it, wise advice I often give people is, look, you're not the only one in this boat. Have you and your colleagues that all report to this person or individuals in different departments thought about how you can rally in a different way? And also, what do you think might be at the root of why he or she is doing what they're doing? And are there some things that maybe this is just a sign that they don't feel like they're included enough, or they're needy, or they're insecure? And so, you know, how can you help them feel more included? Of course, there also is the other technique we call the master of the flare, and that is you shoot something off in the right quadrant that he can then go work on, so you then can get the other 90% of your work done.
I like that one.
Yes.
You know, I've also learned another one, and that is maybe there's a genius there that you haven't seen yet.
And, of course.
And I think I mentioned in the book a fellow I had who never spoke to any of us. He locked his door. He turned his back to the door, so, even if you knocked on it, he wouldn't respond. He played with Star Wars figures in his office, and his current position, they put his salary in the, you know, in the news every year because it's a public position, and he made $2.7 million last year. He made $3.5 million the year before that. So he's doing something right for somebody, and I just never recognized it. And so, that, you know, kind of suspect yourself a little and look around and see if maybe there's something there that you're missing. There might be.
Talk to us more about that. You use that in several places in the book. Suspect yourself. What do you mean by that?
Oh, my goodness. I had a wonderful boss by the name of Jim Stroll. Love this man. And he was a... Man, he was a plain speaking guy, and still is. And I came in, there was some big problem, and I laid it all out to him, and I was probably pointing fingers in every direction but my own. And, you know, he just looked at me, and he said, you know, have you taken time to suspect yourself? And I said, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. He said, were your instructions clear on this project?
Right.
Did you give them an exact deadline? Did you tell them exactly what you were looking for as an outcome? And I thought back through it, and you know what? I had not.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed they knew. And so now when things go wrong, before I start pointing fingers and yelling, which I don't do either one very much, but I sat down and say, hey, I wonder if I messed this up to begin with. Am I the kind of nexus, the genesis of this problem? And if so, how do I correct it? And if I don't find anything there, well, then I might call people together and start inquiring.
Well, I think, in fact, in contemporary terms, you would call that accountability. And that
Absolutely.
Is, can I count on myself as well as can others count on me?
Absolutely. And I'm big on accountability. There's a lady up in Phoenix, Dr. Loretta Melandro, and I worked a lot with her on accountability, my own accountability, and holding others accountable for their actions. I think that is lacking in the workplace, and it's a skill that people who really want to do well at work need to get a hold of.
Absolutely. In fact, the people I've always coached my employees that really set themselves apart are the ones that meet their commitments. They do it consistently without follow-up. Now, it doesn't mean they get it all right, but, boy, if they see they're going to miss a deadline, they're the first to call you, so there's no surprise, and says, you know, hey, Z, I know I said Tuesday, but would it be a problem if we slid that until Thursday because of? And, you know, so long as you know, absolutely, and you will always remember that warning system, shall we say, are people still so determined to stay on and meet their commitments to help others?
That's the A-team that I always tried to hire, mm-hmm. and I won't say I was 100% successful in that, but that is exactly what I look for in a top executive. That is the quality that I'm looking for. And I'll tell you, when I matured as a went from manager to executive was the day that I decided that I wasn't going to have any project people on my direct report team. And by that I mean somebody who really doesn't deliver all the time as promised on time,
mm-hmm, yeah.
And that I was going to fix them. I said to myself, you know, at the top executive level here, those people already have to have that skill set, and I'll have somebody else work with those potential people to see if they can cure the problem that they currently have. But you hit it right on the nose.
And the words, you know, that you use in your book, and I often as well, it's reliability and consistency. I mean, there's
Absolutely.
Just, regardless what the situation is, in times of highs or lows, you know you can count on those you know, pillars within your team.
Yep. Unfair question, because I want to turn the table on you. You're a person with a lot of energy and a lot of accomplishments, and I'm sure you get asked to participate in 10 times more things than you have time for. How do you handle that?
Oh, boy, that's a very good point. Well, first off, you absolutely do have to know your own boundaries, because you don't want to overcommit. Although I'm also one that says, you know, you never know, you know, how much you consume if you don't kind of take 2 bites every now and then. But I think the way I handle it is I actually look for people that could benefit from that type of an opportunity and give the opportunity away.
Oh,
you know,
excellent.
Broker the opportunity for others to get the time in the sun or the time in the challenge box, whatever it is, but knowing that I'm still there to advise or support. So I think, you know, that comes to another mantra in your book. Well, to be able to do that, you have to have a pretty solid, trusted network of people you could recommend, right?
Well, so. Absolutely. And I wrote down your term there, broker the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
because what an excellent way to think of, about that. Boy, networks are so important in life and at work, and they can't just be used in times of emergency.
Right.
So I kind of define networks as relationships, and so I say, you know, build them as relationships. That means there's something in it for both parties. It's not just for you. It's not just for them. And also, it's not just for emergencies, so you have to keep them alive at all times. And then just never stop adding to it, because I've seen that an awful lot. People just stop adding, and then pretty soon, you know, the network becomes smaller and smaller.
Well, and particularly if they spend so much of their career in the same company. That's the
absolutely.
Thing. That's the envy shifting. Well, Don Herzler, author of the book, The Way Up, How to Keep Your Career Moving in the Right Direction, a piece I highly recommend. You can learn more about Don and his constant antics at www.donhurzeler.com. Don, have a great balance of the day. Happy Mother's Day to your lovely wife, daughters-in-laws and daughters, and I really appreciate your contributions here today on Circles of Change.
Happy Mother's Day to all, and thank you for having me.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.
Me on, I sure appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Thank you very much.